make yourself known to everyone, meet these people. We have people who are potential new candidates, potential donors, hopefully monthly donors. I would like to also point out a particularly distinguished guest we have here today, and it's our former state chair, Chip Spangler, who is here from Alaska Vision. If there's anything I can do to help accommodate you, please come see me, and I'll do what I can. Do we have any questions before we begin?
Mr. Park, have one.
Mike Linder has the checkbook. He'll take care of that. All right. Without further ado, our first guest is the executive director of the Libertarian Party, and that is Wes Benedict. Director, we are doing 173 candidates in 2008, which is almost a third of all the candidates run by our party back then. Wes has been a big motivator. His efforts is what motivated each one of our candidates here in Maryland. He has an MBA from the University of Michigan. He has a degree in mechanical engineering from the University of Texas. He has bought and sold a bath and kitchen countertop business, and was a former consultant and engineer for the 3M Corporation and PricewaterhouseCoopers, and he's here today to tell us why libertarian candidates make a difference. Please welcome Wes.
Thank you. Thanks, Bob, for having me out here again. I believe I was here 3 years ago. Was anybody here 3 years ago?
Sure.
Okay. I know a lot of you do look familiar, and I did know that. I think I sat in that same chair 3 years ago. The Libertarian Party has continued to grow and do well in certain areas, particularly in Texas and here in Maryland. And so I'm very excited about that. I'm hopeful that some of the things that I shared with you 3 years ago had a positive impact, and I assume that's the case since they invited me back. I know it's a shorter trip from Washington, D.C. to here for me this time. How many of you are candidates right now? And how many are thinking there's a possibility? And county chairs? Anybody county chairs out there? And the state party officers? All right. A lot of good activists here. I want to thank all of you for doing what you do. A lot of what I do to build the party and what I did in Texas was not really magic. It was just finding some candidates and then finding more. And then I figured out how to find candidates, and I just tried to do that a lot faster. Same thing with county chairs. You finally find someone who's willing to do it. You find a few more. You get them just barely started. Don't give them near as much help as they wish you could give them as you wish you could give to them. But get them started, and they kind of stumble along and get going and get better, and you just find more and more people to do that, and hope it catches on. And I think that's what's been happening in certain states around the country. Right now, Republicans, remember the guys who started with the bailouts for the corporations? Mm-hmm. That was, who came up with that idea? That was George Bush, Republican. It was too long ago, 2008. I was kind of thinking of getting out of politics and moving on to some other things, and that issue alone just infuriated me. I'm still furious. I cannot believe who could think of that, and how could the whole Republican Party buy into that, and how could Republican leaders and Republican office holders and George Bush tell everyone around the country, well, we just have to put the free market on hold. I mean, didn't John McCain suspend his campaign for president to rush back to Washington to bail out banks who had lost all of our money and asked for bailouts? So that's what you have Republicans doing. They got us into two wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, and those who are looking to cost up to $1 trillion. Medicare, that was George Bush's idea in the Republican Congress, to expand the prescription drug Medicare plan that initially was estimated to cost $400 billion, ended up looking like it's going to be a $1 trillion program every 10 years. That was George Bush and the Republicans, and not many people were happy about it. I was not happy about it. Of course, libertarians, none of us were happy about it. A lot of Republicans, independents, and Democrats were not happy with what Republicans did, and they sure liked the way Obama sounded. He running for president sounded like a nice guy, not just a mean old Republican like a lot of like George Bush and those other stuff. And what did he do? He's now in office. He's got a Democrat-controlled Congress and Senate, and he's basically doing the same thing that Bush and the Republicans did. Continuing with bailout, taking over GM, handing out billions to banks, and escalating the war, a surge in Afghanistan, that's all costing more money, and not doing it, you know, not really apologizing for it. Like, okay, this is what Republicans did, and this is what we do for Democrats, and same logic, and the same terrible results. We have a terrible economy. Our deficits are going up. That means the value of the dollar continues to erode. Republicans could say they cut some taxes, but you know, if you just cut some taxes and spend more, you're basically, that's no different than raising taxes because you just devalue the dollar with all of that spending. So the Tea Party got big with all, you know, a lot of people upset with things around the country. I think there's some positive things about a lot of people banding together and coming out of the woodwork and protesting big government spending. I don't know if what's going to come of that eventually. You know, I think it's my job, and I think it's a libertarian's job to try and attract a lot of that energy and get those guys to come and help libertarian campaigns and vote for us when they're willing. But that's not automatically going to happen. You know, Republicans obviously are going to try and do the same thing and tell everyone, well, you know, they're going to kind of make us forget that how bad Republicans were just a few years ago and still today. They're going to try and make us forget that and focus on Obama's a socialist. You know, they just want us to tune out how bad Republicans were, give them a pass, and it's our job as libertarians to make sure that doesn't happen. We need to get out there, remind folks how bad Republicans were, how bad Republicans still are today, and of course how bad Democrats are, and how wonderful America would be if we had we could return to free markets, civil liberties, smaller government, more freedom, just like on those bumper stickers that we just came out with 67,000. So,
And also, before I do forget, any of y'all get that email I sent out about sign up and get a whole bunch of bumper stickers, those more freedom, less government stickers? I should have saved one sample. Did anybody order those?
I'm just going to order this was kind of funny for us in the office because we were needing some new stickers to put in the inquiry packages we send out. And stickers just buy a few hundred, they cost a few dollars each. If you buy several thousand, they start costing like 10 cents each or 20 cents each. And so I thought, well, rather than just buy a couple thousand for our office, let me see if anybody else wants some out there. And it just kind of grew from there. And 2,000 stickers ended up being, we ordered 80,000 stickers. And that wasn't enough. We ordered 50,000 more stickers and have shipped almost most of them out. We have about 25,000 left. But in any case, if you didn't order your own, we were asking for 10 cents donations for stickers. I put a couple hundred back there and someone else put a hundred back there. So just go grab them before you leave. When you buy tons of them, it's okay to give them away. And if 1 out of 10 makes it on the bumpers, that's actually a good rate. That's good advertising. What's that?
They're vinyl, so you can pull them back off.
You can pull them back off? Yeah. I ordered them for Texas from that same company, a different style sticker, but a few years ago, and after I left Texas, I did peel them off. It did come off and clean off good. So, but in any case, and I also put some the Libertarian Party News newspapers back there, so if anybody wants a few extras, go ahead and grab them and take them. So
Bob told me a little bit about my background, education and work experience. I first became a libertarian in 1996. I hadn't really heard of him before that, and I was at the University of Michigan campus for graduate school. I guess I'd heard the word or something and maybe found it on the internet, looked y'all up. Probably several of you have been libertarians a lot longer than I have. And it kind of sounded interesting. I was wanting to get politically active, and I then was walking across the campus, and it was the first week of school. That's when they have all these booths out for all these organizations, and I stumbled across the Michigan Libertarians. I think it was the Wolverine Libertarians, and they had a booth. They had the world's smallest political quiz, and well, let me see that. I was a Republican at the time. I still didn't like Democrats, and I was mad at Republicans. But I was a real Republican. I wasn't really a libertarian. In other words, I had Republican conservative views, not libertarian views. Back in the day, I was pro-war. Thought the war on drugs, you know, would just throw people in jail a little longer, get a little harsher. Hopefully not my friends, though. But other people, you know, would just get planted down. I was a traditional Republican. But I took the quiz. I scored like 90, 100. I think that draft thing, I wasn't sure about. I was for free trade and all the economic things. I didn't think about civil liberties. If you're a white male, conservative, Southern Baptist in the South, civil liberties don't matter. You know, you're just like everyone else. You don't need rights. You've got rights. Other people, they don't have rights. So it was actually after taking the quiz and thinking about more of that stuff, and there was a time when it was Tom, might have been Tom DeLay, but some of those other Republicans were arguing against America getting involved in Yugoslavia and the wars going on there. They were like, we cannot go police the world. And that kind of makes sense to me. That was Republicans saying those things. And I read up some of the things that Harry Brown wrote about war, things I'd never heard before, never thought about, civil liberties. You know, it does seem like we do kind of need civil liberties. I mean, I hadn't really thought about it in America, but when you look at things that have happened in Germany and Russia and all these other countries, it's like, okay, freedom and civil liberties matter, not just the economic part of it. So, in any case, I did some thinking and reading and became a real libertarian. I got a bunch of Cato stuff. I actually read, they started mailing all this stuff. I had classes in 74, but I was reading all this Cato stuff. I did finally get tired of reading about Social Security. There's going so much. I'm bored, you know, lower in there, privatizing or whatever, but I got tired of reading reports about Social Security.
But now you're an expert at it.
Well, I was becoming an expert, but I was like, so what? You know, I used to, even at Michigan and in school, I would stay up all night long drinking beer with friends, arguing about politics, and none of them changed their minds. But, you know, I was a libertarian, and I've been doing this for years with the Republican versus Democrat, but arguing and changing almost no mind. You know, it's like, they're still going to vote for who they're going to vote for. And that's kind of, it's reading all those reports and like, yes, I am learning more and more about Social Security, but I haven't done anything, you know, other than get smart and I'll be 100 years old and then dead, you know, and what did that do? So I decided I wanted to get at you. I'm reasonably intelligent. I've worked in business, worked in different things, and can make some things happen. And so it's like staying up with my friends and arguing over beer, bothering the neighbors, you know, at 2 in the morning is fun, but it's not changing anything. So I decided to get active, and I didn't really ever get active in Michigan. I did join the party. I did sign up for Monthly Pledge. Just a little plug there. I did sign up for a $30 a month pledge to the National Party and gave $200 to Cato Institute while I was in school, even though I was on student loans and getting more loans. But in any case, that's all I did. I didn't do any
work really. I went to one or two meetings. Then I got involved. Then I graduated and moved to the Atlanta, Georgia area. And first job I had, PricewaterhouseCoopers. I probably just don't tell everyone, but I didn't have. They weren't giving me much work in the very beginning. They call it you're on the beach, you're not assigned to a project. And so I had a little idle time and started doing some libertarian stuff and went to the Cobb County meeting. First meeting I went to, there was just two men there. Cobb County, Georgia. Y'all know where that is? That's where Bob Barr's presidential headquarters were. It wasn't his district when I lived there because they've moved the district since then. It was Newt Gingrich's district. And he had just quit, I think, or maybe he'd been out for a year or so. But anyway, it's a suburb of Atlanta, fairly large population county, and there's just two men there. And I showed up and I was gung ho and I'm like, nice to meet you. And I came back the next day. He said they've been there about 5 years. It's usually just the two of them. Sometimes there's a third guy that showed up. And after like two meetings of that, I got an MBA. I know everything in the world. I just graduated. I think I'm the smartest person in the world. It's just like a lot of brand new people that show up to the Libertarian Party. I'm like, we got to do something. And I almost drove both of them crazy. And they did the right thing finally in their life. You be chair. You got all these ideas. You want to go door to door? You be chair. And I went out and did some things that didn't really work. And then I worked with those two guys some more, and they showed me how to do these quizzes or do these booth affairs. And I worked on some actual candidate campaigns and learned some of these guys didn't know what they were doing, and I need to be nice and work with them. And they did ask me to be the chair, and I worked well with them. They're still activists. One of them was Garrett Michael Hayes. I don't know if you heard his name. He's run for governor at least once in Georgia. He's pretty good. He was also real good at helping me give answers to people, because I'm an engineer, not a historian, not a political scientist. Mechanical engineer, that's my background, and not sales and all that stuff. So working with him, he helped me learn to how to answer all these questions you get at a libertarian booth. And by the time I left, we had about 15 people showing up to most of our meetings, including the original folks and quite a few people. And it wasn't a lot of magic, it was just going there, seeing something that's small and just sticking with it and just keep inviting other people. I did get a hold of the database. I was like, there's all these members we must have. Let me have that. Let me get on the phone and let me just call them. And I don't think I ever made it through the list once when I was there. I just started at the top and made it through letter D or F or something before my year and a half was over. That was enough to just call on those first few people to get a lot of people to show up. And I think that's probably some of what Bob's been doing, is just encouraging people to come out to meetings, be a county chair, be a candidate.
What did you tell them to make them show up?
What's that?
What did you tell them to convince them to show up?
Just we're having a meeting next Tuesday at 7. Would you like to come? We'd love to have you. Yeah, nothing exciting, I promise you. it's great to come up with a great speaker or great activities, and if it's people who've been in the party for a long time, often you need something a little more special. And if, like I said, if you can come up with something special, that's great. But often it's just will you do it? That's how I've found is the best way to recruit candidates. I found I could get about one out of four people who was a dues paying member in Texas to agree to be a candidate. And if it wasn't, I just learned that, you just got to ask them real fast. I can't do it. It's like, we'll help you, or, please do it. Just say, please do it. It helps the party. And I'm talking about a 5 minute advocate or less, maybe 3 minutes. And if you'll do it, I had an assistant working with me in Texas, Arthur DiBianca. He now does some work for the National Party, still in Austin, Texas. But would say. Art will email you the paperwork and tell you how to fill it out. So I would just kind of get him to say yes, and then he would follow up with the paperwork, and that was a big part of how we recruited candidates. It's also how I raised a decent amount of money in Texas. Some fundraising letters we sent were written pretty well, but a lot of it's just saying, please pay $25 and be a member, and if you sign up for a monthly pledge, that would be great. It's not, but just ask again and ask several times. Yeah.
Were you strictly sending out the fundraising letters to state members?
Well,
Texas members, or also
inquiries
from the Libertarian Party only members. Or were you going outside the Libertarian?
I never got lists of people who weren't in the. In other words, we had lists of people in the dumps from National.
Right.
The letters I would send would be to those current National dues paying members.
Okay.
Or recent donors to Texas. And we did ask some people who would donate just to the Texas party. There was quite a few who didn't want to donate to National. There's always good reasons not to donate to National. Depending on the. There were quite a few like that, and so we had a separate Texas database and a National database. But the letters that I would send would only be, I would send the current dues paying people, and then if it had been over a year since they had donated, like the response rate dropped off almost by a factor of five or more, a lot. But I would still mail to them once in a while. You'd go back a few years and recent inquiries. So if someone signed up and gave their name on the website, National or Texas, I would include them in at least the first or second letter I'd send out. And often we'd lose money on those, but not much, you're not talking about tons of letters. So, but anyway, raising money, a lot of it's just getting around to doing it. I think a lot of states don't raise any money on states. They'll just send almost any letter just to the best. You can't send to that whole dump because you'll go broke if you send to the thousands of people in that database. But if you just send to the people who are currently donating to the National Party, it's usually pretty easy to raise break even and make a profit on that group. And it helps to have a particular thing to be raising money for. If you're not having a staff and an office, you may not need to raise the same kind of funds, but you might prefer your candidates raising funds and paying for signs and pamphlets and all of that. But having a ton of candidates was a good selling point for Texas. And you know, I put that in Texas, we recruited a record number of candidates, and it's one third of all the ones in the country. And please renew your membership and please sign up for monthly pledge so we can keep that going. When I joined as executive director, we were $25,000 in debt because we had just done a petition drive. And it was like 70 candidates or something. Not 70 in Texas. It was still a decent amount. I didn't recruit any of them. And just going forward, I think the next year I raised like $58,000 for the year. And then I got up to like 100. 120 or 109, and then 2008 we raised $140,000 for the Libertarian Party of Texas, which was a record then. And I left after, and we did well. That looks good when you raise a record. People are excited and happy when you're growing. And I left after December and helped recruit my replacement, and wasn't certain what I was doing next. I was looking around at the job corps, and I said I'll come work if they want me, or if they let me, and they said they won't let me for a while, so I didn't come here. But the guy that took my place, he's done well. His name's Robert Butler. He's been an activist and a state chair in Ohio, I think, and some other places. And I want to make sure I'm not going over time. But they raised more in 2009 than I did in 2008. I was very happy about that. But back in December, a guy wrote a check to the Libertarian Party of Texas. Guess how big it was?
Add a zero.
It makes me cry a little bit because I wasn't there.
It didn't bounce.
And I do know the guy. I actually met with him. He's a high-tech entrepreneur in Austin. I did meet with him right before Christmas, right before I quit, and signed him up for like a measly $250 a month pledge for the return party of Texas. That was on my way out. Wasn't pay me, it was pay the next guy. So we signed him up for $250 a month, and I thought that was great. It was great. I mean, he was impressed. I hadn't paid that much attention. It was like, wow, I can vote Libertarian so many times. And my friend that is in office is saying the same thing. And, just so you know, billionaires know other billionaires. 100 billionaires know other 100 billionaires. In September or August, he signed up, responded to an email I sent, and signed up for a $2,500 a month. Pledge to the national Libertarian Party. So from 250 to 2500, I was like, okay, that's good. I'm glad he did that to national, which equates to $30,000 a year. But then, like I said, he wrote a $100,000 check to help Texas in December. And then he said for this year, he'll match up to $150,000 in donations to the Libertarian Party of Texas. And he's done some other things. I can't prove always what the results are of having lots of candidates and doing lots of activities. I personally think every single vote for a Libertarian makes a difference, and every candidate we get out there, we try and have good candidates okay candidates and try and get a decent message, but I guarantee those 173 in Texas, I didn't know a whole lot about each one of them personally when I was recruiting. Go ahead. I'm gonna take a few questions.
The national kind of thing of a let me start off with.
I'm listening to my grandma.
If you try to tell somebody Libertarian, they say they've heard of you or where you went. A lot of times it's not the fact that we send out letters saying how you join to it, but we in the time we just run in 2008 or. House of Representatives. We actually got a few radio ads on. But I was amazed how many people came up to me because I was the treasurer. So is that you whose name's on that radio? So a lot of people heard that.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, are we trying? When I said we as a national party included, we at the mayor level trying to raise money for a radio campaign ads just so they can reach more people. And instead of doing it the day before the election, if you start, say, the holiday time in September, just running, not the most expensive ads, but keep it up so people know you're out there. And I was wondering, would this national or something like that, and you constantly hit them with the same message. So, say no bailouts, you mean no bailouts.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea that radio advertising is very expensive, and we would quickly burn through our money at national. But we've done it. I mean, I'll pay for ads in Austin, Texas, and random because I thought it's fun. When all the Libertarian candidates and people hear their party on the radio, it motivates them and they donate more, and it makes the voters think you're more serious.
Especially when you consider the people who have decided to race are the ones who are most ignorant about all the issues. They don't know. Who is for gun rights, who is against gun, who is for, tax increase or against it.
Yeah.
So they just go by who's ever the most photogenic or the name they can remember. So.
Yeah, I think a 30-second commercial, or I even did 60-second commercials. I haven't done much of this. I'm just saying I've done a little bit of it, but certainly that helps. But the other thing is having candidates, you get asked to be on the radio for free. You don't have to pay to be on the radio. You're a guest on the radio, and that's great. And oftentimes, a conversation with an interviewer, if it's a friendly one, can sound better than a prepared ad, and people listen to it more. And same thing with League of Women Voters guys. I mean, do they let y'all in those?
Oh, sure.
Okay, yeah. So they do in Texas. It's different in every city in Texas, but most of them let the Libertarians put our information in there. And, getting on television, a lot of us get on television if you run for office. I remember Austin City Council three times, and I was
they have tons of things. I was on television 5 or 10 times each time I ran, in addition to being invited to all these different public forums. And that was a nonpartisan race, but I had run for county commissioner before as a libertarian, and so everyone was like, this West Bennett, he's a libertarian, you know. I didn't have to say it. Which I like to say it. Or I'm okay if you say you're a libertarian or not in a certain situation. It's oftentimes they'll let everyone know, and that that works in Austin, Texas. It's a good word, libertarian. It's not necessarily in everywhere else in the country. But anyway, running ads. A lot of people like to donate just for that, and they have fun doing that. And so I would encourage any candidate to do it. And if you say I've got a radio ad, and you donate $200, I'll spend all of it on radio ads, or that'll buy 4 ads on such and such for $50 each. People will donate for that. Did you have something you were going to ask?
Yeah. Yeah. As you continually progress running more and more candidates, could you see a progression in the vote total? Could you draw any conclusions that maybe you were doubling your vote total, or just incrementally?
I think so, but you know, you can cherry pick the data, and I don't like to do that. I like to be very realistic about vote totals. So in some races in Texas, in some districts, it seemed like that was happening, but in others it did not. And there was a particular thing in Texas in 2006. There were two big independents on the ballot for governor. Kinky Friedman, anybody hear of him?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And then Carol Kinky Strayhorn. Did y'all hear of her name ever? Not as many people recognize that name, but you know, both of them were on the ballot for governor as independent, and Kinky Friedman got like 10%, and she got 18% or something. So that's like, anytime there's an independent on the ballot that gets a ton of votes, that does seem to help all the libertarians or any third party candidates down ballot. So it's just, I'm not going to tell you that I saw that or that I can prove that.
Sure.
But I'd have to go back and look at the data. We did find, like in a bunch of congressional races, oh, that was the highest we had gotten in a 2A race ever, and but anyway, that's fair answer.
Yeah.
I do think it will. I do think that does happen and will happen. I don't know if y'all found that in Maryland, but presidential years are different than non-presidential years, and there's a lot of other factors in there that could affect just your average vote count. Raise your hand if you have any questions. But
no, this is not a good question, but just to feed into what you're talking about, we have found that by running candidates and running more candidates, it increases the number of people who register for the chair dramatically.
Mm-hmm. I think by having a candidate, they're in all those guys, they're in the news more, and people hear about it. So it just all grows. When Ron Paul ran for president, we certainly, that made it a lot harder for us in 2008 to recruit candidates. I don't know if the rules vary in every state, so I don't know if that had the same kind of effect here, but there was lots of nice folks who had been candidates who were telling me, well, I would do it, but I'm going to vote for Ron Paul in the Republican primary. And so certainly, things like Ron Paul running for president and Obama being on the ballot and being so popular, so all those things affect, what happens with the other candidates, or with libertarian candidates, I guess. Yeah.
How is the LNC set up for ballot access for this November?
I don't know the exact number of states, but there's only a few that we're planning to spend money on, and one was, in most cases, it's where we think we can get them on the ballot this year and they have a good chance of automatically qualifying to be on in 2012 without having to petition again for president. So, like New Mexico, we just are about finishing up a drive. We spent about $15,000 to New Mexico, which some people like
Some people don't like when we send money on petitions. I guess y'all liked it though.
Yeah.
Y'all very much. If you don't, I mean, the party goes away. I mean, in Texas, we national sent $45,000 to the Libertarian Party of Texas when I was helping with their petition drive. And I spent 6 months as a volunteer doing that. So no pay, paid my own way everywhere, organizing volunteers and petitioners, but National still spent $45,000. That was in 2004. And I think if Texas hadn't gotten on, that would have been bad. I mean, not only would we not have all our candidates and success over the past, but Michael Bednarik would not have been on the ballot in Texas. You know, he's from Texas and he's not even on his own. That would have been just not looking good. But I think morale around the country would have gone down. So I'm happy when I can talk about places like Maryland that's got a bunch of candidates and is doing well, making things happen. Michigan is doing well. They've recruited a lot of candidates. They also get some people in office in the nonpartisan. The two aren't mutually exclusive. I'm for running candidates to get out the libertarian message and build a party and remind voters how bad Republicans and Democrats are. I don't mind if that inadvertently improves Republicans and Democrats. You know, if they vote for a little more freedom, that's not going to hurt.
I'm not necessarily against that. But additionally, the nonpartisan races, do y'all have that in here?
Yeah, we have nonpartisan races for a lot of the small towns.
Okay.
Or if it's judicial.
Like school board.
The one candidate we elected in the state was countywide level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and it varies by state again, and even within the state. But I'm for doing whichever one. If you want to run for a race, you can win. Pick a small one. That's where your best chances to win are. But if you want to run for anything, I tell people, run for whatever you want. If you want to run for governor, run for governor. If you want to run for state rep, run for state rep. Yeah.
I agree with you that I think the smaller offices are the best. But what about the value of running for a larger office? The actual value, not right? Just run because you're another candidate, that's good for us. But what about the value of running for Congress?
Well, I... For Congress, I think running for Congress does a lot of things, and it's kind of my focus from the national level is to encourage people to run for U.S. Congress and Senate. But let's say you run and you win, well, that's great. Obviously, that was don't need to explain that. But if you get 3% or 4%, does that make a difference? I think it does.
I agree.
If we have 400 candidates for Congress that all get 4% or 5% around the country, and we're not getting 5%, 4%, but they are in California, and I think we're getting some 4s in Texas.
We got 3.
Okay.
Yeah. 3, 4.
Well, people start talking about, I mean, even you saw Kennedy for Senate. That's an independent libertarian or whatever. The Democrat said, let's have the libertarian in the debate. I'm not so sure she still thinks that was necessarily the right thing. It might have had no impact on her outcome, her personal outcome, but having that candidate. Kennedy was up there talking about what libertarians stand for and what Democrats and Republicans are not standing for, that they're kind of hypocritical on it. I like it when libertarians point out how Republicans are hypocritical on economic issues and how Democrats are hypocritical on civil liberties. And like I said, I don't mind if inadvertently, you know, let's say Republicans come back in next administration. I don't mind if they cut spending and cut taxes, even though that might hurt our recruitment efforts a little for the Libertarian Party. That might be an unintended consequence or a second consequence. But we get issues out there. I mean, who would have said bailouts were wrong? I mean, libertarians were constantly saying it, and all those Republicans and Democrats voted for it. You know, if libertarians, I'm sure some others would have said it's wrong, but it's like, when we say something's wrong,
it just has a little bit more credibility. And so I think we have a big impact. And just specifically for Maryland, if Maryland's got candidates for Congress, that makes it easier to convince Delaware to run candidates for Congress and every other state. You know, when Texas is doing it, and California does, and Michigan does, and Ohio is, these the states that are running a lot of candidates, it encourages the others and makes it a nationwide movement. Yeah.
I'm glad you said that, because I've been around long enough, around here, but you've been around far longer. And Maryland has a very, I think we have a great history, as a party, a great history, in the battle for Battle Act.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone from being like, in a most awful situation to being in a situation where we actually get things done. It's still tough, but we get things done. And it was, a lot of people asked me, well, what have you guys done? And I thought, well, this is what we've done. Well, I never heard about any of that. No, you wouldn't hear about any of it. They don't tell you about Battle Act or independence or minus 20 years. They've got a bunch of stories throughout the whole thing. So that is something that we actually can be proud of. And if it can be used to, you know, spark other states up, and we certainly applaud it, I think, really.
Yeah. Well, I've talked about Maryland in other places. Not, I haven't been to that many other places, but I do talk about how one year, I don't know, y'all have one or two candidates, and the next year you recruited one for every congressional race or something. Yeah. And then I said that I was here. I took credit, partial credit.
And you should.
But you know, when Ron Paul ran for, I like Ron Paul a whole lot personally. But you know, when he was planning to run for president, I did not think he would turn into such a phenomenon. You know, I don't think he knew it, and he raised $30 million, and all this activism was happening. I don't know that it was predictable either. It's just kind of, wow, that could happen. Well, and those Tea Party, you know, the Tea Party events kind of happen. You never know when a whole bunch of people all of a sudden want to start joining the Libertarian Party. It, you know, it might become 6 months from now, it might become real popular. If we have candidates on the ballot, then, you know, let's be there just in case. If not, well, we'll keep working hard and continue a small, sustainable rate of growth. But let's keep being there just in case. Yeah.
It seems to me that the position of most of what third parties have come from America has been to the co-option of their views by the major parties.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a chance that there could be some sort of affinity between the Tea Party movement and the Trans movement that could sort of serve as a instrument for that co-option? Do you think?
It's possible. Republicans are trying to get Tea Party folks to join. I think it's, a lot of it depends on the individuals, what their other views are, besides just being fed up with spending. And I certainly wish tons of people would join the Libertarian Party, from the Tea Party movement and from like people that are anti-war that are upset with Obama for escalating the war. So to me, those two, the spending and the war, are two issues where we can pull people from both sides and make an impact. So, yeah.
I this may not be terribly popular to say, but I think we've got to be careful sometimes with the Tea Party people, because sometimes their opposition to Obama is not just opposite. And I'd be a complete blind fool if I didn't see that as a mistake.
Yeah.
And I think that part of it is not right for me. I got plenty to say about
right. It varies. And same thing with George Bush. I lived in Austin, Texas, which is kind of it's called the San Francisco of Texas. It's a very liberal city, and the central city is a very liberal area of the big city. And it's like hate George Bush stickers on every car when I was there. It's like ABWs with no. And for whatever hateful stuff you can find in Obama, you could find that kind of hateful stuff against Bush. And it's those people aren't necessarily, some of them are libertarians, but not all. So it depends on the individual. You know, the Tea Party is not a uniform group of people. They're a group of various views. And I haven't gotten it out yet. I'm working on a flyer to you give to people to take out to Tea Party events to help recruit the Libertarian Union votes and remind them, you know, what Republicans voted for in the past, and have them come take a look at the Libertarian Party. So, yeah.
How is the LP doing financially right now?
Look, we're doing okay. Hold on a second.
Sure.
The I don't know how many of you look at membership reports and financial reports from the national level. You do? Okay. If you look at a 10-year trend, we're not doing very well. The party's about half as big as it was 10 years ago, and it's kind of been a decline like that. I don't see any reason why we can't return to the way, you know, as big as we were in just a couple of years. When I was hired, they were about $75,000 behind budget for this year, and they had already set a pretty small budget of $1.1 million for 2009. It had been up to $3 million budget back in 2000, and that's not adjusting for inflation. So things have been going down. Membership as well. The membership was about 30,000, and it's around the 15,000 range. But I can say that since it's had ups and downs, but like I said, ups and downs on the way down. I'm going to turn it around. I think we all are going to turn it around. It can be done, and we have started turning around. Membership bottomed out in October at about 14,000 something, and now it's up to it's over 15,000. So that's significant growth. The monthly pledge, that's the people who donate every month. When I started in July, it was about $20,000 a month, and it's up to $28,000 a month now. So, and that's just because I focused on the pledge. First, I made phone calls myself to find out what people were mad about or whatever. I found out what they were mad about is you couldn't sign up for a monthly pledge online, which is fun. And then I was mad at our website. Then I got that fixed. That was actually quite easy. We've had like 250 people sign up online for monthly pledges, but from 20,000 to 28,000 a month, that's very good. And the one guy gave $2,500 a month. That was one of the big chunk of that, but that was not all of it. And revenue, I wasn't born to write a fundraising letter writer. I never imagined who would have thought who does that, but the ones we're sending now are bringing in about twice as much money as the ones that were going out earlier in 2009. So each letter instead of bringing in about $10,000 or $15,000 is bringing in about $25,000 to $30,000. We raised a little bit more in the second half of 2009 than the first half, and things are looking fine in January and February so far. So I would say that financially and membership wise, we're just barely turning it around, and I think I'm hoping by the end of this year that's clear that that's a certain trend. But it's not, we're not flush with money, the National Party. Texas is. That's a problem. I mean, how do they spend their money effectively? That's their problem.
How are we going to be able, do you think, by 2012 to get 50 state ballot access or at least 48?
I bet we will. Yeah, that's... In some places, it's gotten easier. So, like North Carolina, they got some rule changed, and it just made it easier. And I guess they did whatever y'all did. So, didn't y'all get a rule changed? Yeah. So, as long as the thing is, if you start early, it's not a panic situation. If you start early, you can hire some petitioners and pay a reasonable rate, $1 to $2 per signature, and it's a predictable thing, and they get it done. On time. If you try and put it off, it's like, okay, we don't want to do ballot access. We wish we didn't have to. We win the lottery, so then that's paid for it. Then you wait till the last minute, and it costs like $4 and you're flying people in because you're about to miss the deadline, and their census sheet up. So I just know how important it is and how easy it sounds to get signatures, but how hard it really is. But if you plan it ahead and just do it, you can make it happen for a lot less money. So I think we can do it. I wouldn't guarantee Oklahoma. You know, there's like a couple super expensive states, and that's mainly just Oklahoma. I think it even got easier in West Virginia recently. So we should. Let's go for 50. I mean, yeah.
We've only got 45 in 2008.
Yeah. Some of that was just, not getting started soon enough, and so because they spent enough money, it's just that we didn't start soon enough to make it happen. Yeah.
When Kenny ran in Massachusetts, that's a single race.
Yeah.
All together. How did he do in terms of fundraising support from the country? Did he reach out for that, or was it sort of operation? I saw him on the TV a couple times.
Yeah. I compared to the Republican and Democrat as a shoestring thing. I don't know how many millions they spent, but he spent, I think he spent 20 grand or something like that. I don't know the answer. He had to get petition signatures to get on the ballot. And I spoke to him maybe twice. And he, like most candidates, are asking us for money, the national party. Help my campaign is important, and it's just a reality that if there's more than one candidate, if we go with that strategy, there's not a ton of money at national. And I don't think we've ever just handed out cash, but people donated from around the country because he was the only one running at this time, only a high profile one. And he was on TV quite a few times and in the press. That's another thing I've used to, I hope, leads to some of these wealthier people making bigger donations in the future. It's like we spend like 10 cents a vote in many cases or less. We're spending like a quarter of a penny a vote in Texas when we got 7 million votes. My math might be wrong. But compare that to what the Democrats and Republicans spend. They're spending like $10 a vote per state. Well, I don't want to take up your whole convention. I visited Michigan a few months ago, and I said I was not there to tell them what to do or tell them how to do things, just to say thanks for Michigan doing their share. They're doing a whole lot. They're building their party. They're running lots of candidates, and it's not magic. It's just just doing those little things and getting them done. And that's the same thing here for Maryland. You guys are doing great. Keep it up, and your efforts also inspire the other states. I even told a guy from Delaware, you're not here, are you? Delaware guy? He called me, he's like, it's typical. They call me, want all this help. They're, why isn't the party helping? I'm like, well, it's not that easy. We need to build it up. And I talked to him a while. I told him about Maryland, and I'm serious. I said, come to the Maryland convention if you'd like, because Delaware's not too far. It's not like Texas. But anyway, I've used y'all as an example. So, the point being, you're doing well, helps the rest of the country.
Excuse me. Could you just give us an overview of national headquarters, like we're all used to?
Yeah, I will. But before I forget, are there any candidates? Raise your hand if you're a candidate, and put your hand down if you have a website.
Okay.
If you need a website, does anybody need a website as a candidate?
I am part of the Maryland website. We have a secondary program. That's the kind of website. Now, but I know what you're talking about, and I've been meaning to respond to it, but I thought I'll point this out. Okay.
We're making one for, it's McKinley?
Yep.
McKinley, tell me your name again.
Jerry McKinley.
Jerry McKinley. Okay. Kyle Parks, who's one of our staff, He's a new staff member. He's our best fundraising. He's our best fundraiser. Our lowest paid employee. He just graduated from undergraduate. He may go to law school soon. But anyway, he's helping put together websites for candidates for free for anyone that needs it. That's one minor thing we do at National. But before hiring him, I said we have bills and we have to pay bills and raise money in order so you can't just do fun stuff. You have to pay some phone calls and raise money. And he's been great at it. That's one. So helping some candidates with the websites is just a brand new, very simple thing. It's not much, but it's one thing we started doing. We do send tons of fundraising letters, and we get people to join and pay $25 as members. In some ways, that can seem like just a merry-go-round or whatever, or a treadmill, but identifying who's willing to give $25 to the party is how we also, it's not just the money, it's like, oh, that guy cares, call him and ask him to be a county chair, or call him and ask him to be a candidate, or to run for office. So it's not a, even if the money was all going in a hole, it's building that membership database. We have 5 full-time right now, and a few full-time, part-time people in our office. That's kind of a 10-year low, and so we were down to 4 few months ago, but we've got Kyle on, and it takes an amount of administrative work to process 15,000 memberships a year. We get all these checks in the mail, we got to turn them in. Okay, so, and then we try and help the state and counties a little bit, but we don't get a lot of help out, and I wish we didn't know.
Okay, one more question, please.
I'm going to
break it in 5 minutes and we'll have all of you.